Welcome to the conference, and please note today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Andrew Leisinga. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Okay, well, welcome everybody to the Workgroup D conference call for the Patient Safety Complications Steering Committee. I would like to thank everyone for taking the time to call in for this. We know you're all quite busy, and we gave you pretty short notice on this, so we really appreciate that you could make it on. What we'd like to do for this call is just to do a bit of preliminary review and evaluation of this group of measures in a smaller group in advance of the in-person meeting, which will be occurring next week. We're hoping this will help us think through the measures a little bit, hash out any questions anyone has, and to the extent that we can, create a sort of shared understanding of the measures. And for those who haven't done this before, we're hoping it'll give you a little bit more of a comfort level with both the measures and the evaluation process itself. We have assigned some of the workgroup members as primary reviewers. I know we don't have all the workgroup members on the call today. For those of you who are on, we may ask you to help us walk through the measure that we had assigned to you, just sort of give it a bit of introduction and give your thoughts and impressions of it. For the first few, we can just get started ourselves. I don't think the work group members we had assigned are on the call today. But we also have some preliminary evaluations that our work group members did online. So we can use those as a kind of jumping off point here. And we can see where for each measure we've got some degree of consensus or where they may be a bit of difference. We'll probably try to focus our discussion on those areas where there is some difference in the preliminary reviews. Before we get started, though, maybe we could have each of our work group members introduce themselves. We can start with, how about Jim Smith?
Hello, Jim Smith. I'm a professor of physical therapy, and what else would you like in the introduction? Anything else?
Oh, no, and just anything you'd like to add, but that's fine.
Thank you.
Louise Probst? Louise, are you still on? I lost Louise. Well, Jean DeLeon, are you still on?
Yes. My background is wound care and physical medicine and rehabilitation. I'm a physician in the Baylor Healthcare System in Dallas.
Great, thanks. And Lisa McGifford.
Hi, this is Lisa McGifford. I'm with Consumers Union's Safe Patient Project, Consumer Advocacy Project.
Great, thanks so much. Well, in that... So now I guess we can just jump right into the measure evaluations. We'll start with measure 263, which is patient burn. Again, if you have the webinar, access to the webinar, we've got the preliminary evaluations displayed up here, and we can just kind of walk quickly through the measure evaluation criteria one by one, if that works for everyone.
Andrew, do we need this up, the webinar?
You don't need it, but it would probably be helpful for you if you can pull it up. I can describe a little bit about what we're seeing if you're not able to access it.
And was the webinar in one of the emails? I don't remember seeing a webinar.
It should be on the agenda.
It's on the agenda.
The link on the agenda.
Okay.
So for 263, it looks like there's a fair degree of consensus regarding the evidence. Some rated it moderate, some said it rated it high. Does anybody have any particular thoughts or with the evidence?
Well, this is Lisa McGifford. We're talking about the burn measure, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to do all the ratings, but I mean, my sense is that it is a high. I mean, that is something that's definitely worth including and looking at further. It seems to be, for me, it has a lot of things because it has to do with surgical centers. It's there's a lot of surgeries being done in these centers, and it's something that it looks like it could be preventable if it was paid attention to. So it seems like a good measure, and it's an outcome measure.
Great, thanks. Any other thoughts on the importance of the measure?
But this is Jean DeLeon, sorry. I didn't see enough to tell me that this is a problem of magnitude. Of course, when it happens, it's terrible. But this is not a daily occurrence. And the percentages that I did see were very, very small. I mean, they did mention one maximum of like 3.2%, I think. But most were really 0.01%. I mean, that's my only concern. If it's something you never want to happen, it certainly should be preventable, but I didn't see a very large percentage as I did in some of the other topics, like the confirming endotracheal intubation. I mean, there were much higher percentages to work on there.
This is Lisa again. I mean, I know that often these adverse events are small when looked at per facility, but big when looked at, you know, the whole country or the volume or the, you know, 3% of a really high volume is a lot of people. So I think it's definitely worth us looking into more about, you know, the issue of whether it happens enough, but it seems like it's something that happens enough that it's on the radar and it harms enough, you know, a significant number of people nationally, and there should be systems in place to prevent them.
This is Louise Probst. I would agree with that. I think I read somewhere 500 to 600 cases per year of highly preventable occasions, so I assume that was just, you know, there might actually be more than that, but I really felt like the public really didn't have any understanding that as many as 500 to 600 people had serious burns as a consequence of surgery a year, and that really in itself was quite large.
This is Jim, and being new to this process, I was looking for guidance, and part of the criteria for this could be large numbers of patients, or, and I think it applies here, when it has a substantial impact for a smaller population, and this does appear to be a substantial impact.
And I agree with that. I agree that it does have a substantial impact when it occurs.
Thanks, everyone. We'll probably move on from importance to evidence, the quantity, the quality, consistency of the evidence provided by the developers. And I should mention we have some of the developers on the line here, so we can ask them questions or ask them to respond to any concerns if needed. Operator, I believe we have Donna Schlossberg and Kim Wood on the line, if we could open up their lines.
And their lines are now open.
Great, thank you. So Donna or Kim, did you have any particular responses to the comments that were just made?
We are happy to respond to any questions that the group might wish to pose.
Okay. If there are no specific questions, I think we can just move on. So let's take a look at the evidence. Were there any particular comments or thoughts on the evidence provided by the developer for this measure? Fairly, ratings were at least relatively consistent. There are no particular concerns. We can go ahead and move on that as well. Same goes for the reliability and validity of the measure. Some consistency and a really high degree of agreement among the work group members. There's one concern expressed by a work group member that is not on the call today. She said the validity response did not address possible variability in detection of burns or documentation of variability that may impact capture of information. Comments on that or any other part of the reliability or validity testing results provided by the developer? If not, we can go ahead and move on. So we may move pretty quickly.
Should we take that bark as the response?
Yeah.
We can. Good timing.
Yeah. But yeah, let's go ahead to usability.
Sorry, that was my dog.
Again, fairly high degree of consensus here. A couple of moderates, but mostly highly rated on usability and feasibility. Any comments, questions, or thoughts on the usability or feasibility of the measure? And does everybody understand what we're trying to get at there? For those who haven't been through this process before,
could you review it?
Yeah.
I believe usability is really referring to the usability for end users. So that would be consumers and to some extent, you know, providers and purchasers as well. Whether the results of the measure are understandable, usable. And feasibility really refers to whether the measure is feasible to implement for those who are going to be implementing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the only issue, this is Lisa, is the issue that Jean brought up, is that we're talking small numbers when you're looking at a facility. So I think that's always kind of a challenge as to how you present it and, you know, you have to look at the time frames that you're looking at and, you know, what your denominator is and make sure that it's something that makes sense for people. And, I mean, I think it's possible. It's just something that needs to be attended to in the development of the measure.
And the measure itself is, it does not delineate the degree of the burns. It's all burns. I mean, of course, the catastrophic burns, but just electrocautery burn, just a small electrocautery burn. Each one of those is counted. Is that how the measure is written for the numerator?
And could we have the developer respond to that if you're... Yeah.
Correct. That the measure does not delineate the burns by severity.
Okay,
it,
so
considers all burns.
All burns, and if you had two electrocautery burns in one patient, it's still per admission, so it's per patient. It's just
right.
It counts as one.
Right.
And this is Lisa. I meant to mention that I think that's good. To include all burns, and you know, there may be, when the measurements are out there, there may be different reasons that you might want to carve out the serious ones from the mild ones. So I think that if there was any way to include that in a measurement, you know, those kinds of that kind of information in the measurement, it's helpful. But that it is important to look at all of them and not just the serious ones, because the ones that aren't so serious may someday become serious if they don't learn to how to prevent those.
And this is Donna. If I could for just a minute interject the measure developer. A couple of things. One is that at this time, surgery centers are not required to report on quality. And so the numbers that you see, this is a voluntary group of ASCs that have been reporting. However, CMS just released the final rule, and ASCs will be reporting. They have put together a quality program for ASCs to begin October 1 of 2012. And so some of the detail that you're asking for, because of currently it's a voluntary reporting, we can't get to the detail of the burns, But down the road, that would be a possibility since this is going to be a requirement for all ASCs in the future.
That makes perfect sense. And I would think in the future it would be a value to the consumer, to the patients, to know if it's just one number. I mean, they could be burns that you wouldn't even consider treating. You've just acknowledged that they occur, but they were so minor, they required no other treatment, versus those that required extensive wound care because they were that serious. And you would want to know serious burns versus superficial burns.
Hi, I'm sorry to be late. This is Bobette Bond. I just got on the call a few minutes ago, and I see my name on the agenda. So I was just trying to catch up and just let you know I was here, and I missed a lot of the conversation about burns.
Okay. Well, if you have any particular thoughts about the measure, we sort of ran through a bit through the importance, the evidence, the reliability and validity. Everybody seemed to be fairly comfortable with each of those categories. But if you have any particular thoughts that you'd like to share, we'd welcome them.
Okay. No, I don't. I think the discussion's been good. I don't have access to the screen, you know, the NQF presentation. It's not installed on my computer. Is anyone else having trouble with it?
We'll see if we can figure that out. I'm seeing it on my screen. And I know the others at NQS are.
Oh, fine.
Troubleshoot it a little bit.
I'll follow along then.
I'm seeing it. It's just very small.
Sorry, this is Jessica. If you maximize the screen in the top right-hand corner, that might help viewing the webinar. And if
that
not,
my glasses.
Sent the spreadsheet this morning, so that should help as well. It's the same spreadsheet.
Yeah, if you didn't hear Jessica there, she sent the work group members the updated spreadsheet, so you should have it on your email. And
okay, I'll look at that. Thank you.
So with no other comments, it looked like in their preliminary evaluations, each of the work group members who rated this gave it a yes for suitability for endorsement. So it looks like we've got a high degree of consensus there. Any final thoughts on this measure or concerns, questions that you'd like the developer to respond to? Right. Hearing none, we can go ahead and move on to the next measure. Measure 346, iatrogenic pneumothorax rate. That's a patient safety indicator from ARC. I don't know that we have anybody from ARC on the call today. I believe they had said they weren't going to be able to make it today. But if you do have any questions, we can compile and collate those, and we can send them to the developer for them to respond at the in-person meeting. So just make sure to note any questions that you have and bring them up, and we can take them down and provide them to the developer. Lisa McGiffer, we did have you assigned as the prime.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We don't need you to walk through.
Oh, good. But I do have a question. I noticed that, you know, some of these are maintenance measures.
Yes.
And a maintenance measure is what?
That means that it was previously endorsed.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, we'll endorse measures, and there's a 3-year cycle after which the measures come up for endorsement maintenance. And
review
them again under all the endorsement criteria. And typically we'll ask for them to bring back some additional testing results that they should have been conducting as they implemented the measure during those past 3 years.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
So are you going to walk through this or
want
me to? That'd be helpful. I have to tell you that I know some about this, but some of the information was a little over my head.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just that I didn't know quite how to digest it. So,
well, let's see if maybe some of our other work group members have some input. On importance, we had some difference, so some voting or rating it moderate, some high.
Mm-hmm.
Any particular thoughts? Anybody want to give any comments on the importance of the measure?
I think, like the first measure, it's one of those things you never want to occur. Not that it occurs with such tremendous frequency, but you never want to drop a lung. I don't think anyone would argue with that.
Yeah, and I couldn't quite tell how frequently it did occur. It looked to me like, and I even went online and looked at some things, and it seemed like it was something that occurred way too often. But there seemed to be, always some caveats about situations where it was hard to prevent it from occurring, that kind of thing. So
I think you're exactly right. That's why it's very difficult to give an absolute number as to, well, these are all the ones that were preventable and it was simply caused by error versus part of the condition and the nature of the surgery that had to occur.
And the other thing is that it seemed like there was a really long line of, there was a lot of exclusions, which to me is always a flag if you're excluding. I mean, there's like 5 or 6 pages of exclusions. And to me, if you're excluding that much, maybe you're really not getting at the problem. And, I mean, it just seemed odd to me that there were, maybe there's 10 pages of exclusions. I'm still going through them. There's a lot of them. Does anyone have any insight on all those exclusions?
Well, it seemed to me that any time the chest cavity's open, you're going to have a pneumothorax or likely to have a pneumothorax. So there are some interventions in which the chest cavity needs to be opened, and so it would be an expected complication of the procedure. But then there are other times when you don't want it to happen, but for whatever reason, some patients, because of past trauma or other sorts of things, might be more at risk than others. And I don't know if there's – I'd like to ask the measure developer if the exclusions are able to sort of sort through those. I mean, a lot of them are open procedures, so I'm thinking that those were expected.
Would you just like a little bit more explanation of why they included the exclusions that they did? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so let me ask, I don't know who that was that was just talking.
That was Andrew. Oh, sorry.
No, the woman that
Louise.
That was Louise. Hi, Louise. So if you expect pneumothorax in an open chest cavity, then you're saying that these exclusions look like they're all, that always happens when you open the chest. Is that what you're saying? Or you expect it to happen and you need to be prepared for it?
Or they usually put in chest tubes or something to accommodate that.
Right. And so this measure wouldn't capture those who opened the chest and didn't put the chest tubes in or didn't do the precautions needed with the expectation that this is likely to occur.
Yeah, and
this would not capture that.
Yeah, I think that they're trying to exclude those. What I
right.
don't know whether
right.
it was a long list, and then there were some that I'm thinking, okay, I wonder why that one's excluded. So there would certainly be times when someone might be at higher risk, maybe because of their anatomy or something else that's gone on. But I didn't know what the measure developer felt like. They were able to differentiate between excluding cases when it would be an expected complication or expected
mm-hmm.
occurrence versus those when it might just be higher risk.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like a good measure would be some kind of outcome measure when there is an open chest cavity, because it seems like that is a very, I mean, I think in addition to this one, that would be an important measure to get at, well, when the chest cavity is open and it's at high risk and they're not prepared and they aren't ready for it, then what happens? You know, what are the outcomes with that? But this wouldn't get at that because they're all excluded.
No. Does the measure developer have some insight on that?
I
don't think they're here.
Yeah,
oh, they're not
they
here?
They actually have the developer.
Okay.
I mean, this is an old measure that, you know, was developed like 10 years ago or so, right? I mean, I remember by HRQ.
Yeah, it's part of the patient safety
indicators.
But
I would assume that it does differentiate for that. I mean, it is iatrogenic pneumothorax, so by definition of it should be pneumothoraxes that you didn't expect to happen that occurred as a complication of a procedure. But I just couldn't answer your earlier question, Lisa,
yeah,
about all those different, because some of them, when I read through them, I was curious about.
They're not all open procedures. Some are going to be laparoscopic. Some are going to be primary lung infections, things that a pneumothorax can be a very common occurrence as part of the disease process.
Okay.
But we're looking at the exclusions. Are there some in the exclusions? Did you see laparoscopic surgery in the exclusions?
Yes, there's some that
okay.
are going to be,
okay.
yes, like the percutaneous needle biopsy of the lung or laparoscopic repair of the diaphragm. Those are all in the exclusion criteria.
Yeah, why would you exclude that?
Well, because as you're trying to repair the diaphragm, it's absolutely, you know, possible that you can hit the lung. I mean, you try not to, but
yeah,
it can be adhered and very close due to infection or due to trauma there, and it's certainly a possibility. And when I look at the exclusion criteria, I know because it was a lot of pages, they put pneumothorax on the consent for all of those procedures as a possible foreseen complication. So measure
yeah.
covers procedures, and I can't necessarily give you one offhand, but a procedure in which they wouldn't even think to put pneumothorax as a possible complication when you're trying to consent the patient. Well, these, you know, you can get infection, you can get bleeding, you know, it's possible that that lung will get hit. They do go over that, and there's some procedures I'm sure that they do where, you know, there's, I have a simple abdominal hernia repair. If I'm having a hernia repair, you shouldn't be near my lung.
Right. So I guess that brings, I mean, I maybe I'm speaking outside of the scope of this measure, but it does seem like, yes, the examples that you're giving, you know, people say there's always a risk for this or that, but we still, you know, ask for measurements of infections, even though, you know, before surgery you're always told there's a risk of infection. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't measure it.
True.
Yeah, but it seems to me like, I would just like to talk to the, you know, whoever developed this, why, what the reasoning is with all these exclusions. I think we've established that. We all kind of want to know about that. And what kind of effect does that have on the measure? I mean, that's what I'm thinking is does that sort of make the measure moot if you know, you're only getting at a small segment of the iatrogenic pneumothorax, then is it really going to tell us the whole picture of what's happening?
All right. Could somebody just sort of give me a brief restatement of the, you know, what I could bring back to the developer to ask them to prepare for the in-person meeting to give a little bit more explanation or answer to some of your questions?
Maybe they could give us sort of an understanding of the types of situations for which there are exclusions. And then whether all the exclusions fall within those or if there are exceptions in relation to their level of expectation that they would occur. That makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And why, yeah, I mean, is there... And how much iatrogenic pneumothorax are we missing when we have all these exclusions? I mean, I bet they've looked at that. I'm sure they have. In the development, I'm sure they looked at it. And if, you know, 80% of them are in these situations, then we got a problem if we're only capturing a small portion of it, even if it is an, a, quote, expected or anticipated issue. The goal is to have it not happen. So that's kind of where I'm from.
I sort of thought of the measure as being trying to capture lungs that are dropped when someone's trying to put in a central line or, you know, which would be still covered or, you know, something's picked in a procedure when, you know, it's really not expected.
Okay. Well, that would be a good question to ask. Is that what they're after here?
Yeah.
All right.
But I sure would like to see a measure of when... of these others, too, someday.
And maybe we could move on to other reliability and validity. We sort of talked about the specifications about it being precisely specified. That covers the exclusions to some degree. Were there any thoughts on the reliability or validity testing for the measure, or whether those were sufficient, if you have any questions about it or concerns?
Can you tell us what page that's on?
Yes, in the
reliability is...
Reliability starts on 24.
Thank you.
Oh, no, I may be...
I think that's right. 24, yeah.
Sampling, reliability...
And again, one of the work group members who is not on the call, gave a comment here. It says, validity response did not address possible variability in detection of burns or documentation of variability that may impact capture of information, sort of a comment she had before. Louise, it looks like you had a comment here as well. Saying that the metric and inclusions were well-defined, generally easily observed and tracked.
Nope, you're on 263, and now we're on 346.
I'm sorry, you're absolutely right. I was looking at the wrong thing. That's my mistake. yeah, no comments on this one. But.
And this is extracting from the administrative data, right?
I believe so. Look at the measure itself.
Yes, it is. Andrew,
hi. Heidi, okay. Thank you, Heidi.
I just joined.
Great. Any additional comments, reliability, validity? Can go on to usability and feasibility. Any thoughts on those issues?
I noticed, I'm sorry, I'm not sure which section I'm in. It's in the validity section. I noticed that there was, on page 25, there was some, I guess this is the reviewer at NQF's notes, based on the analysis, we've made the following recommendations for future revision. So there were some recommendations to drop some of the exclusions. Well, I guess just drop one, I guess. So we probably should talk about that more later.
Which page was that?
25. Towards the bottom of the page, the 2B3.3 results.
Right. This is Heidi. That's actually from the developer, ARC.
Oh, okay. It is the developer. Okay. Sorry.
Right. So I think what's not clear, and I think this has come up in a couple work groups, is have they made these changes now, or is that in the next iteration? And
Looks like future revisions, yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. You were on to another section.
No, no problem, no problem. Sounds like no, were there any comments on the usability or feasibility of the measure?
Well, I think, you know, from the public's perspective, I think it would be usable if you're really clear about what it is and what it isn't.
Right.
You know.
And that goes back to the exclusive.
Right, right.
Jim here, I just want to clarify that if we're looking at iatrogenic as an inadvertent adverse effect, I think it's clear what is expected here. Even if we look back at the exclusions, with the exclusions, my interpretation was that any of these would not be an inadvertent effect. Rather, it would be a deliberate or intentional or expected response based on either the pathology or the surgical intervention. But if there's confusion, we should get clarification from the
inadvertent versus a, how would you describe inadvertent?
Well, the example was given earlier about putting in a central line. Then if I induce a pneumothorax, that was not a reasonable expectation with that procedure. To me, that's clearly iatrogenic.
Got it. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. So we'll make a note of that again. It appears everybody gave this a yes on the overall suitability for endorsement. We had consensus there. Any overall comments, thoughts, or impressions about the measure overall? Hearing none, we can move on to the next, which is actually just the pediatric version of this same measure, iatrogenic pneumothorax. Does anybody have any thoughts on the importance, the measure, and report?
So they also have a lot of exclusions in this, or some exclusions in the denominator. Large numbers of patients, so that's important. Well, 6.15% mortality rate. Oh no, that's general. Let's see.
And this, Louise, I realize my spot's blank there. I'm not sure why. That was probably just a problem when I was filling it out, but I think I would have given it the same score I gave above, which would be high and high for some of the same reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it would be an important one.
Got a common understanding of the measure there.
And this is a current measure, so this is another maintenance, right?
This is another maintenance measure, yes.
Okay.
For health outcome, Jean, I noticed that you had said no. Was there a reason that you had identified this as...
If I said no, then it was probably because I hit the wrong button. Sorry.
Gotcha. No problem. Just wanted to clarify. All right. So we can move on to evidence. Any thoughts about the quantity, the quality, or the consistency of the evidence provided by the developer, or their rationale for this measure?
This is another AHRQ measure?
It is.
Is it? Yeah.
Sort of a companion to the previous one, the pediatric version. And we can make a note of the same concerns you had on the last measure.
Mm-hmm.
Some clarification about the exclusions and the types of occurrences where there are these exclusions would be expected, and whether they, the ones that they've given fall within those categories, and so on.
You know what's interesting is that some of these, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of information about these measures that have been on the table for a long time. They've been used pretty widely, how they've been used and what their impact has been and that kind of thing.
We have the descriptive statistics. There's not research literature reported,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
we have robust descriptive stats.
Bobette Bond. This may sound a little off point, but in all these measures, and I didn't do my evaluations, I'm sorry, I'll get those done, but it's hard to anticipate what the providers that are using or having these reports be done on them, how they feel about some of this, and I don't know if there's NQF work that talks about physician or hospital resistance on this stuff or criticism they have of it. The only thing that we deal with a lot on these is the small volume of them makes the hospitals just say that, they're not reliable. And I don't know if you have, a general response to that or if that's worth discussing on every measure, but that's what we hear on a lot of these things. And I don't see it in the review,
Sorry, can you just repeat that quickly?
Just that the volume for this, and I don't... 346 and 348, I don't know that much about those measures. But on patient burns and on the, specifically on 501, the two placements, we hear a lot, not so much with burns, but on 501 for sure, we hear a lot that it happens so, that there's problems so rarely, that either the procedure happens rarely or there's problems so rarely that any focus or attention or time spent on these measures is a poor use of limited resources for the hospitals. And I know they can say that a lot about a lot, We don't hear it from the doctors, we hear it from the hospitals. So I don't want to delay the progress on this, but in general, I'm wondering if that's a theme that comes up in these MQF things and if there's a general response to that. How valuable is it if there's so little use of the measure or so little data?
Heidi, do you know of any... particular responses or if this is a common occurrence concern?
Yeah, it's a common occurrence. Thank you. That was
This is Lisa. It definitely is a common occurrence. But this measure is extracted, so they don't really have to report anything. There may be some benefit to them to report more codes and more information so that it can be risk adjusted, but my sense is these AHRQ patient safety indicators are
mm-hmm.
are sort of the least burdensome
invasive for them. Yeah,
for them. And you know, I've developed my own kind of theory is that I think the more burdensome it is for them to report, the more likely it is for them to do something about it. But I may be wrong. I've got this. I'm kind of watching this theory. But, you know, we certainly have seen, for example, in the past, more activity generated from reporting hospital infections than reporting iatrogenic pneumothorax because, you know, it's done after the fact on these AHRQ measures. And, you know, somebody doesn't have to proactively say, okay, we just infected this person. We got to document it, you know. So there's like an active brain thing, I think, that goes on when people have to say that, you know, at the time that it occurs.
Well, that's an interesting
point. That's just my personal theory. Not proven. It'd be great for somebody to study that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'll try to think about that in my responses to the refugees. I'm sorry I didn't get them done, and I'm finding this really helpful, actually. I'm new to this, so I appreciate the process.
No problem. Yeah, that's what we were hoping to accomplish here. And just to remind you, these are not official evaluations. These are just preliminary evaluations. Again, just to do just that to help us kind of think through and give us some initial direction.
For those that are new, can you remind us again what the process will be going forward between now and the meeting next week? And
sure. And I can go over that a bit at the end as well. But we'll ask you to do something similar to this in advance of the steering committee meeting. And in fact, we'd like you to go through and evaluate each one of the measures, if possible, so that we'll have something like this to bring to the in-person meeting as well, some preliminary evaluations of all the measures. And we'll use those to work through at that meeting again. And then we will do an official vote on each of the criteria and on the overall measure either at that meeting if we have time to do it or potentially just after the meeting, again, in an online survey.
This is Bobette again. I thought you guys said on the first orientation call, I thought NQF said that this work is all maintenance measures. Is that correct?
It's not all maintenance measures. It's
okay.
Largely maintenance measures, but there are some newly submitted measures.
Okay.
I believe the measures that we're looking at right now are all maintenance.
Uh huh.
There's maybe three or four that are new.
New. Okay.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. So, sorry. Was somebody going to say something? We can take a look at reliability and validity of this measure, usability, feasibility, if anybody has comments on any of those items. And take a minute to look over if you need to. No comments for the moment. Again, it looks like everybody gave this a yes on the overall suitability for endorsement. So I don't think we had any particular problems among those who reviewed it.
Yeah, and I think you already said we would just ask the same questions about all these exclusions and everything. Yeah,
exactly.
That's good.
We'll ask the same questions regarding this one. All right, then. We can move on to the next measure. And for these, I believe we may have the developer on the line if we want to ask questions. Take a look to see who's on. Oh. Operator, is Kazia Cook still on the line? I believe she may be the one with the developers for this measure.
Yes, her line is now open. Are their lines
Hi,
open?
I'm here.
Hi. Am I correct? Are these your measures, the next two, 523 and 524?
Yes, that's right.
Great. All right, so we can walk through these again, and if you have any questions or concerns, we can, we've got the developer on the line for this one for you to have questions. So we can just start out again with importance, whether this is important to measure and report.
Excuse me, was this the one that came in late?
No, I'm sorry. This is
an assessment conducted.
This is 0501, right?
Assessment conducted, yeah. So
oh,
actually,
which one?
We were thinking.
0523?
0523, that's correct. Sorry, we had 501 on the agenda, but we didn't manage to get it out to the full work group, I believe.
Okay.
So we're just going to sort of skip over that one for now, and we'll probably just review it at the full committee. So, again, back to 523, mean assessment, pain assessment conducted, and if anybody has any comments about the importance to measure or report the sub-criteria, whether it has a high impact or if there's a performance gap and their rationale for those things.
Well, this is Lisa. I would just put out there as an overarching theme for me, this is a process measure, and I think, you know, we should try to move away from process measures for public reporting. I think, you know, process measures are useful for the providers to improve their care. So I'm not saying it should be totally discounted, but you know, this, we're looking at this measure for its value for public reporting, and I just think that outcome measures are more effective.
Agreed. And those are my comments, actually, for both this measure and the next. This is Jean DeLeon. Asking if somebody about pain in no way implies an outcome. And all the process measures are like that. They're important to do, and not saying that they're endorsed or is not saying that they're not important. They're absolutely important to do, and everyone should do them. But to measure it and report on it, I'm not sure that that's driving quality, unless we were in the very, very beginning stages. When we start implementing quality programs in healthcare systems, a lot of times we'll start off with these process measures just to get people going, but then we start just measuring outcomes rather than the process. How long has this measure been in effect? I didn't see.
It's been publicly reported for just about a year. It received time-limited endorsement in early 2010, and this review would be granting it full endorsement.
But one of the things that I was thinking of when I was looking at this was, is there a outcome measure for pain? Because I think it is a really important issue.
There is an outcome measure for pain. It's improvement in pain interfering with activity. I don't recall the NQF number.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Any other comments on the importance to measure and report?
I just think the issue, this is Robert Bond, I think the issue of pain, I mean, I appreciate that these are process measures and I appreciate that our goal is outcomes, and we certainly work on pushing for outcome measures also, but pain is in such an important topic that and so difficult to control and so, you know, individual-based that it's very difficult to give up on much until we have good ones, and there aren't a lot of great outcome measures for pain. That's my only 2 cents. I'm not arguing at all with the need for process to you know, transition into outcome, definitely. But since there's outcome limited also, it's all qualitative. This is a difficult area, and I think my only point is it's such an important area that I think that you know, a lot of focus on this is worthwhile.
Thanks, Bobbitt. Okay, well, if no other thoughts or comments on that section, we could move on to the evidence, the quantity, the quality, and the consistency of the evidence provided by the developer. Were people generally satisfied with that? We had a good number of low and moderate ratings on this category. Does anybody have any explanations for that or thoughts you'd like to add?
Well, I rated based on the criteria of five or more on the quantity of evidence. I think what's important to remember, if I'm interpreting this one correctly, it is unique to measurements taken off the OASIS, that it's a home care measurement for those patients receiving services in their own home. And that's why it was a unique body of knowledge. There's much more complementary knowledge available or information available about pain, either the measurement of pain or treatment, but this was unique to to home care services.
I believe that's correct. Any other comments or questions?
That might have been, I had a note, it's been a while since I've done this, so I don't completely remember, but I think it was something that it said about having consistency or reliability within an institution or a setting, but not across, and that might be, I wasn't completely certain how to interpret those comments. If anyone else remembers reading that.
I don't remember reading it, but I'm wondering if the measure developer.
That doesn't sound familiar to me either. We did have some information about reliability, which was, you know, how well this measure could distinguish between various providers, and did reasonably well.
Okay. Was there any other research that looked at, I guess it might be hard, but how this would then compare to a patient response on, say, like a CAP survey?
If you could unmute Liz Madigan's line, she's a colleague of mine and led the literature review, so she may be able to chime in on that.
Yeah, operator, if you
her line is open. Great.
Thank you. Hi, this is Liz Madigan.
Hello.
So part of our limitation, of course, here is that there's so little home health care specific research, so that it's really hard to identify how we can do those pieces. And home health care just really started with the CAP stuff, so we weren't able to actually make any associations in the environmental scan between this measure and patient satisfaction.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, we're sort of already talking a little bit about reliability and validity. Were there any additional thoughts about that? Again, relatively consistent responses from the preliminary evaluations. I think Louise Probst, you had added a note saying that an overview of the reliability testing would be helpful and the inter-rater issues across agencies. Did you have
I think I just got that.
Excuse me?
I guess I can just point out that the reliability testing we conducted for this maintenance was the reliability of the measure rather than the reliability of the underlying data item. So there was some earlier inter-rater reliability, I think, that was included in our initial submission a couple years ago. But this information is just about the measure reliability.
Reliability of the measure score?
Exactly.
Thanks. Any additional comments, questions for the developer? Validity or reliability of the measure?
And the measure is, I'm going back to the numerator, the number of episodes in which the patient was assessed for pain using the standardized tool, okay?
Yes.
So it doesn't really have any qualitative elements to it. It's just like, did they do it? Well, did they do an assessment using the standard methods, I guess.
Yes, that's correct.
I wonder, how do you measure whether they did it standardized? I was looking at something that said the guidelines were too voluminous to
those are the clinical practice guidelines. So,
well, but that's what they would have to do, right? Oh, no, that's not what they had to do.
Right, because they're using actually, what's recommended is that you use a standardized and validated pain measure. So they could use something like a 1 to 10 scale or a FACES scale depending on the patient population. So.
Okay. But you're just getting really at whether they asked them about pain.
Correct.
Any more thoughts on that, or on the next section,
nope.
Which is usability and feasibility? Seem like a meaningful measure for users and feasible for implementers.
It's certainly easy to implement. I'm not sure that you can explain well to the patient how that's going to impact them because it implies that you're treating their pain. You're simply going to ask them about it. I don't know how they would position that in their mind.
So as you identify these issues or questions that you have, you know, even if they're not something that you want to ask as a developer, I would ask that you sort of keep them in the back of your head, make a note of them maybe, to raise them during the in-person meeting so that we can potentially have a broader discussion among that larger group and, you know, get maybe a bit of additional input from those around the table on these things that you're asking about. So just a request to sort of keep those things in mind if you're having questions, concerns about it. Make a note of it and try to raise those things at the in-person meeting.
Yeah, as a consumer, I just think I'm always puzzled as to why these measures aren't a little bit more complex, like did you ask them about pain and did you do something about it? You know, because that's really, I think, what consumers are looking for.
That's actually the next measure, which is where the pain is.
Oh, all right.
Well, this is Bobette Bond. I looked at the next measure, and I see that the next one's whether there was any work done on pain itself. But this measure doesn't seem to be linked with that measure, and so I just need a little clarification when it's a measure type and it's process. But then it says that this measure is paired with another measure, and you say no. To the previous speaker's point, is there work to be done where they are linked so that it's more valuable if it's in conjunction with something else, or do they have to stay unlinked? I just don't really understand exactly.
So there are some data collection issues regarding linking those measures. The pain assessment conducted is based only on the preliminary assessment that's done when the patient begins home care. The pain interventions implemented is based on the final assessment that's done when that patient is discharged or transferred from home care. So they're
from home care? Okay. So they're not in the same location.
Well, the pain interventions implemented is sort of looking at the whole period of time. You know, did the patient have the intervention during the time period they were receiving home health care?
Okay.
Was the assessment conducted is just based on, you know, at the start of care, was the patient's pain assessed? So certainly the implementation measure builds on the assessment.
And implementation also requires that it was in a plan of care, the physician ordered plan of care. So it's sort of a multi-step process.
And then I'm wondering, in what scenarios would you link or not link these? Because it does seem like it's more valuable when it's linked to the rest of the entire care cycle.
So, for example, if you assessed a patient for pain and they didn't have any pain at the start of care, and of course then they're reassessing at periodic points, if the patient didn't have any pain, then it wouldn't necessarily be in the physician's ordered plan of care and implemented. Does that help, or is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. This is Heidi. If I could just, from the NQF perspective, maybe describe a little bit more of what we mean by paired measure, which may help with this as well.
Yeah, I think that's what I need, a better definition of that for myself.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, a recommendation for a paired measure can be initiated by either a developer or the steering committee, with the developer, of course, agreeing to it. But it's intended to truly have two separate measures with two separate reporting rates. But the intention is they would always be used and reported together. That's
okay.
What we mean by a paired measure. And I think this is something that the committee will have to discuss, and maybe you all can have a preliminary discussion today. Is there value in having both of these measures? If so, should we recommend that they be paired, and is that
mm-hmm.
feasible? The other question, though, is, and I think this is what you're struggling with, is having the assessment conducted, is that close enough to the outcome, or by having measure 524 plus the other measure that actually looks at improvement in pain, are those two sufficient without the 523, which is assessment conducted? And I think that's probably where most of the discussion will be at the steering committee level, and it may be useful for the work group to have a little discussion about that as well.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. This is Bhagat. That is what I'm trying to figure out. So...
That's what I thought. Yeah.
But being the newbie in this group, I'm not exactly sure how to articulate it because the linkage is important to me.
Yeah, and I think the one thing is, and this is where I think most of the discussion will be on the importance of this measure, is how proximal is it to the outcome? Do we have measures that are more proximal that achieve
right.
the same thing or more? And
right.
I think that's what you all are kind of struggling with now right at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So we would need to know what the other proximal outcome measures are for this, right? Or if there's other, what else is in this arena that would, what the other NQF measures are that would either be proxies for this or supplement this or be more precise than this.
So maybe we could move on to the next measure and sort of have these questions in mind as we take a look at that one.
Yeah.
Right, and we can also pull the other measure as well and make sure that's provided.
So I think what the last person was asking was, you know, if you have a process measure, it makes more sense to link it to an outcome measure also. Is that what you were basically saying?
Yeah, when you
yeah,
can.
I think that
how does
too.
NQF, yeah, and then how does NQF handle that? And you know, what are the rules on that, really? So.
Yeah. And linking two process measures together, to me, is, you know, not helpful. Great
right.
and an idea. But
right.
linking it with an outcome measure might be worthwhile.
Right. Might be.
Yeah. This is still a process measure.
Exactly. That's helpful.
So would everybody agree with moving on to the next measure at this point, or would you like to discuss 523 a little bit further?
I'm ready to move on.
Okay, let's go ahead and do that. Move to 524. And we can sort of, to begin with, take a look at just the description of the measure. The title is Pain Interventions Implemented During Short-Term Episodes of Care. And the description, the brief description, is percentage of short-term home health episodes of care during which pain interventions were included in the physician-ordered plan of care and implemented. In some sense, that does seem to be, I don't mean to overstep my bounds here, though, it sort of includes the previous measure in the sense that you've got a pain intervention included in the physician-ordered plan of care, which would, I would assume, means there have been a pain assessment done. But we'll open up for discussion at this point.
But I think how that's worded, this is Jane DeLeon, this is how this is worded makes it difficult to link this with the first one, because the first one is an assessment at the initiation of home health. If you didn't have pain on the initiation of home health, and then 2 weeks later you now have pain, whatever reason, that's not going to be in your numbers for 523. But it will be in your numbers for 524 if they get a physician order for whatever pain intervention. So it's going to be inconsistent when you look at it because of the way 523 is written. It has nothing to do with assessing for pain on each visit. They only ask that you assess pain on the first visit or on a readmission, but not during the time course of caring for the patient. And then 524 is at any point during that time period of care, was there an implementation of any kind of pain intervention, whether it's effective or not, doesn't come out in this at all. But it does sound like it's in another NQF measure. So that might be nice to link this one with perhaps the one that actually deals with an outcome.
Right.
But this is unique to home care services, and the other may not be unique to this population.
True. I'd have to see the other one, but that's why I don't know that linking these two would make a lot of sense. My complaint about this one is still the same as it was with the one before, that there's no evidence that asking a question has anything to do with the outcome for the patient. Having any intervention, whether it's appropriate or not, still doesn't tell me whether it was good for the patient. If you gave them narcotics and it made them so sleepy they couldn't eat anymore, and, you know, they had to be readmitted for malnutrition, I don't think you did them a service. But if you are sitting longer, walking farther, happier, eating more, sleeping better, you tell them on a pain scale that you're better, that tells me way more about the quality of care. Every time we break one of these processes up, I have the same problem. The process itself mostly doesn't impact quality. It's combining certain processes with an outcome.
Just for everyone's information, the improvement in pain interfering with activity measure is a home health specific measure as well.
Yeah, I just found that as well.
Yeah, the society, I found it as well. We'll make sure that everyone has it at the time of the meeting.
Okay, I think that'd be useful.
We can give you details now on the phone if it's helpful as well.
I think we should take a look at it when we're in our in-person meeting. That sounds like the more meaningful measure.
Okay.
But I don't know how to get to the more meaningful measure without taking those steps. Pain is important. You have to ask about it. You have to have interventions.
Mm-hmm.
We don't seem to have that perfect. We need all of it to take good care of the patient. We have them split up into different measures.
I think that's right. This is Barbette again. I think that's a little bit of my I'm not frustrated, but I'm trying to figure out how does NQF, you know, determine value when I completely understand the speaker's concern about when you break down each process, then you're left with these tiny measures that may not actually add up to outcomes. And while I could see in the NQF stuff was this ability to link, and it might not be the, you know, I understand that you can't link things all the time, every time. And since NQF, I think you just suggested that what NQF does is when there's a link there, it's all the time. But it would be good to at least have a conversation about what all the pieces are that have to be together to make an outcome, you know, to get to the outcome. And I'm just a little frustrated with how that would happen with the way NQF does this. And I love the NQF process, but you do trade off these tiny increments for the big picture. But trying to rebuild those together in my head is where I'm trying to see what you would do to make it all go together. That's it. I guess that would turn. I guess my recommendation from that, what everything, my little diatribe there would be, it would be nice if we could see the other measures that might fit together with this, as I think you suggested already, at the live meeting.
Yeah, and we'll do a little more thorough search and find measures that are relevant and applicable, and we'll have them there for you to review as well. And we'll
have a little longer discussion about this topic. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a really serious topic. But I think I should. So, thank you.
Any additional comments or questions for the developer? And was there anything that anyone wanted on these two measures, the developer to provide a specific response on, that they could come back to the in-person meeting and have some materials for you or responses on, or? We know we have some work to do on the NQF end to get the measures, the relevant measures gathered for you. But was there anything that the developer can do?
I don't have anything for the developer, excuse me. It's Jim here. But it's been very enlightening to be involved in this discussion, in particular to help me better appreciate that this is a process, and which was something this was the first I reviewed, and I got very hung up on that one with 523. 523 is the pain assessment. The other concern I have, and I want us to think about before we meet, is that pain is not universally assessed in home care based on the data presented to us, and we need to be considerate about achieving consistent and hopefully universal assessment of pain in home care. If we can influence that, even though it is only a process and it does not close the loop, I think we should also be considerate about the responsibility to making this change in practice so that pain is consistently and universally assessed.
Jim, would you also agree that it probably should be assessed on every visit rather than just on the first one?
Yes.
Is it possible to change these measures, Andrew, to make suggestions for revision that it, instead of reading only on admission or readmission, that it be on, because then it could be paired very easily.
Sure.
Right.
Because we can ask the developer about that. We know that may impact their testing. They would likely not have done testing on the specifications, you know, any revised specifications that they would make to that effect, but we could ask the developer at this point whether that is something that could be feasible. Does the developer have any response to that?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Liz.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say that I think the restriction about when we can, you know, what time points we can collect this is really based on the OASIS assessment instrument. So the OASIS instrument asks, you know, the question about was the pain assessment conducted, were pain interventions in the plan of care, were they implemented at various time points that are, you know, that are based on that data collection. And it's certainly possible to revise the data collection, although that's obviously a much more involved process than just revising the instrument, you know, or just revising the measure. I think the measure is specified, it's sort of specified in a logical way based on the data items.
So OASIS data are collected at the initiation of home health care,
yes,
when a patient returns from the hospital, then there are abbreviated OASIS episodes. If a patient dies, there's not a full OASIS done at a patient death. So there's various time points, and I don't know if you all have access to the full OASIS and which items are collected at which time points, but that might be helpful for your discussion.
Absolutely.
And this is Lisa. I was just going to kind of reiterate my concern of us spending a whole lot of time on process measures.
Well, it sounds like,
Go ahead.
This
is Bobette again. I'm looking at the measure now. I'm looking at the write-up you did, and I'm looking at, I'm not familiar with OASIS. So it says here that OASIS supports three process measures. They're all related, and I understand the last speaker's concern that we're spending too much time on process. I actually agree with that. But the three measures are related to pain assessment and using it. Oh, I've got to get my glasses on. Related to pain assessment using standardized and validated tools, documentation of pain intervention in the plan of care, and implementation of the physician-ordered plan intervention. So I think what we're missing in this conversation is that last one, implementation of physician-ordered plan interventions, right?
What you're looking at right now, 524, is the implementation of interventions measure. There's an additional measure that is privately reported to the agencies that measures whether or not pain interventions were included in the physician order plan of care.
Okay, so none of this gets to the outcome of whether the patient felt less pain.
So there's a separate measure, the improvement in pain interfering with activity measure, that gets at whether or not the patient's pain improved.
Okay.
So I guess there are four home health pain measures, three of which have been NQF endorsed.
Okay, that's helpful. All right.
It sounds like we've got some good sort of general themes for discussion at the steering committee meeting. Again, I would ask that you kind of try to keep that in your mind as we move toward the in-person meeting and bring up these points of discussion that we've been having today for the full steering committee so we can address some of these concerns up front probably. It sounds like many of the issues that we've been discussing here toward the end are really fairly relevant for the importance part of our process, and we can talk about that as we begin talking about these particular measures in the importance discussion. And again, I would encourage you to make a note of some of your concerns and questions and raise those with the larger group when we get into the discussion of these measures. Otherwise, does anybody have any final comments or questions or concerns? Sounds like not. And we have some time for public comment at this point. Operator, do we have anybody on the line who would like to provide any public comment?
If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, you can press star 1. Again, everyone, that's star 1 on your phone line if you'd like to make a comment. And no one has queued up to make a comment.
Okay. No public comments. Thank you. So just to talk a little bit about next steps again and your roles at the steering committee meeting, if those people that we assigned to, those work group members who we assigned as a primary reviewer to a particular measure, could, again, take another look back at those, give them a good read-through, a good review, and maybe we could have you do a bit of guidance for the committee, help us along with the discussion at that point. That would be very helpful, and we would encourage all the other work group members that we have on the call today as well to chime in and help move that discussion along. With the discussion that we've had today in mind and some of the concerns that you've raised, we can bring those up early in the process, and those seem like some pretty important things to talk about. So please don't be afraid to talk about those at the in-person meeting and raise your concerns there. Again, we will be sending out another evaluation like we sent you before, an online survey where you can enter your evaluations for all of the measures we'll be discussing at the in-person meeting. That will be coming to you very shortly, and we would certainly encourage you to fill those out and fill any comments that you have on any of the measures in, and we will, again, use that as a sort of basis for discussion at the in-person meeting. Once again, we really, really do appreciate you taking the time to call in for this today, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Okay, thank you. And you want us to fill that form out before we get to the meeting, so you can use it to guide it.
Yeah. We'll send you that via email, and you'll have it in advance of the meeting.
All right. Thank you.
All right, well, I guess that concludes our call. Thanks, everybody, again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye.